Installation and Maintenance of Health IT Systems. Unit 9, Creating Fault Tolerant Systems, Backups, and Decommissioning. As healthcare organizations adopt new technology to improve their efficiency, their dependence on that technology increases exponentially. However, what happens to all these critical applications if a failure were to occur? What about the integrity of the caregiver's data in the event of a disaster? Today, we will look at creating and maintaining fault-tolerant systems and discussing the importance of fault tolerance before moving on to more details about fault tolerance and creating fault tolerance within your own system. In this segment, we'll also outline some backup strategies, and since we're on the subject of backing up, we'll finish on some tips about on archiving and decommissioning data and hardware. As healthcare organizations adopt new technology to improve their efficiency, their dependence on that technology increases exponentially. However, what happens to all that critical data when applications or systems fail? What about the integrity of the caregiver's data in the event of a disaster? According to the Forrester Consulting Report, 3/4 of respondents experienced downtime related to server failure during the past 2 years. 68% had an impact on critical activities, and greater than half affected administrative processes. Rarely was there no impact at all. Recovery times were typically measured in hours, not minutes. Only 1% of server outages were resolved within 5 minutes. Provider strategies for swapping servers and manual failovers are not medical grade. There are 3 levels at which fault tolerance can be applied. Traditionally, fault tolerance has been used to compensate for faults in computing hardware. By managing extra hardware resources, the computer subsystem increases its ability to continue operation. Hardware fault tolerance measures include redundant communications, replicated processors, additional memory, and redundant power and energy supplies. Hardware fault tolerance was particularly important in the early days of computing, when the time between machine failures was measured in minutes. A second level of fault tolerance recognizes a fault-tolerant hardware platform does not, in itself, guarantee high availability to the system user. It is still important to structure the computer software to compensate for faults such as changes to the program or data structures due to transients or design errors. This is software fault tolerance. Mechanisms such as checkpoint, restart, recovery blocks, and multiple version programs are often used at this level. At a third level, the computer subsystem may provide functions that compensate for failures in other system facilities that are not computer-based. This is system fault tolerance. For example, software can detect and compensate for failures in sensors. Measures at this level are usually application-specific. It's important that fault tolerance measures at all levels be compatible. A system is said to have had a failure if the service it delivers to the user deviates from compliance with the system specification. A fault is the adjudged cause of a failure. The significance of this is that, in the absence of precise requirements, it is impossible to tell whether the system has failed, and therefore whether the fault has occurred. Rule 1. Know precisely what the system is supposed to do. Part of this process should be determining how long a system can be allowed to deviate from its specification before the deviation is declared a failure. However, it is not sufficient to know what the system is supposed to do under normal circumstances. It is also necessary to know about abnormal conditions the system must accommodate. It's virtually impossible to enumerate the set of all possible faults that a system might encounter. It is much more manageable to deal with classes of faults. Rule 2. Look at what can go wrong, and try to group all the causes into classes for easier manageability. This involves defining a fault floor based on your ability to diagnose and repair faults. The goal of fault tolerance is to prevent faults from propagating to the system boundary, where it becomes observable and hence a failure. In general, the further a fault has propagated, the harder it is to deal with. Since fault tolerance is redundancy management, however, it becomes a matter of the degree of redundancy desired. For instance, if almost certainly cheaper to deal with memory faults by using error-correcting memory, that is, redundant bits in a memory location, than it is by providing shadow memory. Note, however, that dealing with faults earlier rather than later may go counter to the advice given above regarding dealing with classes of faults rather than individual faults. Rule 3. Study application and determine appropriate fault containment regions and earliest feasible time to deal with potential faults. In general, the price paid for fault-tolerant systems is additional resources, both in terms of time and in terms of space. As with most things, these two can be traded off against each other. In some applications, such as flight control or any other critical instance, timing is everything, even at the cost of extra processes. In general, the comparison approach to fault detection works best in these situations. In other applications, maybe a space probe, weight and power consumption is an overriding issue, arguing for a higher reliance on time redundancy and suggesting the use of acceptable tests. Rule 4. Completely understand the requirements of your application and use them to make appropriate time-space trade-offs. Protecting a system from every conceivable fault can exhaust another resource, money. This is true even if a rational set of fault classes is defined. The trade-off here is that fault coverage versus the cost of that coverage. In all systems, it is possible to classify faults by the likelihood of occurrence. Rule 5. Whenever possible, concentrate on credible faults and ignore those classes likely to occur unless they can be dealt with at little or no cost. Time is an essential element in any digital computer system, even in systems that do not claim to be real time. It is important to define the minimum period of time a system can fail to provide its defined service before a failure is declared. Unnecessarily short failure margins force the system designer to resort to expensive fault tolerance mechanisms, such as real-time fault masking. Rule 6. Carefully determine application failure margins and use the information to balance the degree of fault tolerance needed with the cost of implementation. Let's talk a little bit about creating fault tolerance. A high reliability system is one of the key environmental considerations for IT systems deployed at an acute point of care. Hardware, software, and the network itself are all potential points of weakness in preoperative settings. Fault tolerant servers provide the highest levels of availability, which is why their purchase price is slightly higher than less capable conventional servers. Even though high-end servers employ at least some redundant components, like hot-swappable power supplies or error-correcting code memory, these servers still fail when a non-redundant component, such as a microprocessor, fails. In a fault-tolerant server box, the redundant components execute the same instructions in lockstep, and self-checking technology detects and isolates errors at the component level. When a hard error occurs, the faulty component is taken out of service while a duplicate component continues normal processing tasks. Other server-based hardware features that add reliability and fault tolerance include hot add memory to allow for more RAM when the system is turned on and running, with no boot required to recognize the new memory. Hot swap hard disks to allow removing SATA or SCSI disks while the system is turned on and running. Hot plug PCI X slots to allow adding or removing PCI cards while the system is turned on and running. Redundant power supplies and cooling fans to allow the system to continue to function when a power supply fails or the fan stops working. The configuration complexity required to make cluster servers highly available puts the price on par with fault-tolerant systems. Yet they are less reliable and more difficult to operate and maintain. Return on investment is best measured against the cost of downtime in terms of patient safety, lost productivity, financial consequences, exposure to litigation, and general disruption. Lastly, consider mirroring your critical servers in another location on the network. That way, if the main server room goes down, say in the event of a fire or water damage, these servers are already strategically placed and online. If that's not an option, then consider purchasing and configuring hot spare servers that can quickly be brought online should a production server experience catastrophic failure. These strategies can provide simple but expensive solutions to ensuring nearly 100% uptime in business-critical environments, such as EHR systems. Probably the most well-known fault-tolerant technology supported by Windows is Software RAID, which is available on systems where basic disks have been changed to dynamic disks. RAID 1, or disk mirroring, is an excellent method for providing fault tolerance for boot system volumes, while RAID 5, disk striping with parity, increases both speed and reliability of high transaction data volumes such as those hosting databases. Software RAID means that RAID is implemented within Windows itself, but for even higher performance and greater fault tolerance, you can choose to implement hardware RAID instead, though this is generally a more expensive solution than Software RAID. Traditionally, most Software RAID systems use SCSI, but another option common nowadays is SATA or Serial ATA, which is usually only a fraction of the cost of SCSI, but with almost comparable performance. The arrival of solid-state drives on the market promises a new era of reliability as they become less expensive and their capacities increase. There's more to RAID as far as fault tolerance and storage goes, however, by implementing a distributed file system or DFS on your network and replacing DFS routes with File Replication Service, FRS. You can ensure maximum redundancy for shared volumes, allowing users to access shared files on the network not only more easily, but also when a particular file server goes down. Another useful strategy includes enabling Volume Shadow Copy Service, VSS, which allows Windows to keep point-in-time snapshots of data volumes so users can recover accidentally deleted files or revert earlier versions of documents they're working on. While not strictly fault-tolerant technology, VSS does provide increased availability for user data and helps protect it from accidental loss or destruction. For more information on how Shadow Copy works and how to implement it, go to the Microsoft website. Also, bear in mind, Shadow Copy may not be compatible with some EHR systems. Be sure to consult the vendor before thinking about implementing Shadow Copy. Another useful strategy includes enabling Volume Shadow Copy Service, or VSS, which allows Windows to keep point-in-time snapshots of data volumes so that users can recover accidentally deleted files or revert to earlier versions of documents they're working on. While not strictly a fault-tolerant technology, VSS does provide increased availability for user data and helps protect it from accidental loss or destruction. For more information on Shadow Copy and how it works, go to the Microsoft website. There are ways to implement software fault tolerance into the applications themselves to help achieve a degree of high availability. Most of these are vendor-specific. However, there are some things that you can do on the software level to improve your availability and redundancy. Virtual availability solutions are revolutionizing the availability market. Not only do they offer better choices for enterprise customers, but with their lower cost and simplified approach, they are answering the demands of small to medium environments, to which clustering systems is not an option. Server virtualization enables multiple virtual operating systems to run on a single physical machine, yet remain logically distinct and consistent with hardware profiles. Some advantages to virtualization include single operating environment to manage, single application licenses required, complete protection for the server, hardware, data, and the network, no single point of failure, complete redundancy of the storage and data. It can utilize any type of storage, SAN, DAS, NAS. It's manageable with basic system management skills. Supports all applications without modifications. It's simple, and it's less expensive to manage, which means a reduced total cost of ownership. A virtual machine is an independent of the physical hardware that it's running on, but there's still a requirement for protection against failures within the physical server itself. Virtualization can increase business continuity on one hand by providing a method for quickly restoring corrupted or damaged VMs, but consolidation of server resources increases the risk profile of applications that are consolidated. However, virtualization of key storage or application servers, when combined with duplicate hardware hosting, can provide an excellent availability strategy. Lastly, when considering virtualization as an option, remember that some applications just do not run well inside a virtual environment. These tend to be programs that require large amounts of I/O or frequent memory access rather than simply CPU access. A large database, for example, can require more power and resources than can be delivered within a virtual machine environment. In this case, performance would suffer too much, and a better approach would be to run the application on a physical server. It's important to address these concerns with your EHS vendor when considering virtualization as an option. In healthcare settings where many computer terminals are mobile, the use of a distributed architecture can help maintain access to the application in the event of a network interruption. For example, during a recent server shutdown at a local hospital, a distributed data management system prevented the loss of anesthesia data, which could have taken a hospital months to recover. Because anesthesia workstations work as thick clients and could function without connection to the server, they were able to continue running while all of the hospital other software systems, including remote and web-based applications, went down. Here are some suggestions with regard to system-wide enhancements to improve reliability of your network infrastructure. Install uninterruptible power supplies, or UPSs, to ensure systems can shut down properly when electrical power on your site fails. This not only includes your server rooms, but network closets and critical access points as well. Also, install backup generators to allow critical systems to continue running during long-term power outages. Voltage meters, which are usually built into the UPSs, should be made available to ensure voltage variations don't damage components or cause data corruption. Building redundancy and fault tolerance in network infrastructure switches and routers and WAN links can also provide secondary network connections between sites should primary network links go down. Lastly, redundant ISPs, also called multi-homing, will help ensure highly reliable internet access.